attention. You are now entering the debarkation area. No talking, no smoking. Follow the orange line to the processing area. The next scheduled departure to the prison is in 2 hours. You now have the option to terminate and be cremated on the premises. If you elect this option, notify the duty sergeant in your processing area.
Do not attempt to adjust your dial. There's nothing wrong here. Be prepared for an hour that'll knock your socks off. Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America. And I do say good morning because we are at least alive to share it, to participate in it. But what will the future bring? And when? Glad to have you here on Perspectives on America. I'm your host, Jeffrey Bennett. You're listening to this program live on WWCR, Worldwide Christian Radio, 12.160 megahertz on your shortwave dial. If you'd care to do so now, turn on your computer. Come on over and join the chat room. It promises to be a very lively day. You can find us at www.federalobserver.com. Why will this be an unusual program? Well, a number of things have come together. Some of the things that we're going to share with you today are going to come as a shock to many. People are in their comfort zones. They don't want to hear truth. They don't wish to hear reality. But in order to establish the groundwork for where we plan to go today, we must return to a series we began some weeks ago entitled Language of Deceit. Today we'll discuss the liberal mind, deceiver or deceived. In the United States, these past 30 years, we have witnessed the gradual dissolution of the one society on earth where freedom, opportunity, and prosperity have been made possible for everyone. That decline into neo-socialism has come because of the power acquired by well-intentioned liberals who are merely socialists in disguise. These liberals blind themselves to the damage done by their socialist programs, to the Constitution, to the family, to individual liberty, the concepts of individual responsibility and accountability, and many other legacies of the system created by our founding fathers. They ignore the 100 million deaths committed in the name of their idealism last century, the high taxes, and world's highest suicide rates under Scandinavian socialism. And in the United States, they ignore the fact that hundreds of billions of dollars in social and education programs haven't just done poorly, they've failed dramatically. And yet they offer only more government programs and more government control as an answer. What is it in the liberal mind that makes intelligent people ignore both history and our own decades-long experience in favor of fantastical visions? Ludwig von Mises Austrian-born American economist and author of the definitive work on classical liberalism, writing in The Free and Prosperous Commonwealth, provides a compelling explanation to that mystery as he writes, "It is generally acknowledged as desirable for a man to acquire the techniques he can make use of in life. And the man who enters a field whose techniques he has not mastered is derided as a bungler. Only in the sphere of social policy, it is thought, should it be otherwise. Here, not reason, but feelings and impulses should decide. For example, the question, how must things be arranged to provide good illumination during hours of darkness? Well, those are generally discussed only with reasonable arguments. As soon, however, as it is to be decided whether the lighting plant should be managed by private individuals or the municipality, then reason is no longer considered valid. Here, sentiment, worldview, in short, unreason should determine the result. And we ask in vain why. National and governmental affairs, it is true, are more important than all other practical questions of human conduct, since the social order furnishes the foundation for everything else. But however lofty may be the sphere in which political and social questions are placed, they still refer to matters that are subject to human control, and must consequently be judged according to the canons of human reason. It is not surprising that von Mises criticizes sentiment and worldview for his classical liberalism, the free markets, individual liberty, and limited government system favored by today's conservatives is no religion, no worldview. There is nothing mystical about it. It does not try to explain the cosmos and does not seek to say anything about the meaning and purpose of human existence. It seeks to give men only one thing, the peaceful, undisturbed development of material well-being for all. Von Mises wrote that the political ideology of classical liberalism had first been developed as a scientific theory without any thought of its political significance. Von Mises was adamant that the inner blessings, happiness, peace of mind, exaltation must be sought by each man within himself alone, and saw classical liberalism as the most reliable and efficient means for providing the material foundations that afford mankind the opportunity for such introspection. The unreason, von Mises refers to, is the root of socialism, or what we call modern liberalism. He wrote that the belief in a socialist system doesn't come from reason, but from a pathological mental attitude from resentment. He adds that many of those who oppose classical liberalism or capitalism know very well that their situation under any other economic system would be less favorable. Nevertheless, they advocate socialism because they hope that the rich whom they envy will also suffer under it. Von Mises calls this pathological mental attitude a Fourier complex, after the French socialist, and explains that it is a reaction to the fact of human condition that scarcely one person in a million succeeds in fulfilling his life's ambition. The common lot of man is the failure of his hopes, the frustration of his schemes, his own inadequacy in the face of the tasks which he has set himself. These constitute every man's most deeply painful experience. To von Mises, there are but two ways to respond to this condition. He quotes Faust to identify the first way. No man deserves his freedom or his life who does not daily win them anew. No man deserves his freedom or his life who does not daily win them anew. Von Mises adds, He who accepts life for what it is and never allows himself to be overwhelmed by it does not need to seek refuge for his crushed self-confidence in the solace of a saving lie. If failure comes, he simply tries harder. To von Mises, this is the rational, reasonable response to the human condition. But the neurotic cannot endure life in its real form. It is too raw for him, too coarse, too common. He takes refuge instead in a delusion, which is characterized by its resistance to attack by logic and reality. According to von Mises, the neurotic himself must learn why he does not want to face the truth and why he takes refuge in delusions. What delusions do socialists and liberalists suffer? Von Mises points out that the utopian Fourier was unable to construct a vision of a socialist society without making two assumptions, which Marx also made, that contradict all reason and experience. The first is a practically limitless increase in production, based on the idea that all the materials of production are freely available to us with no need to economize. The second is the idea that in a socialist society, work will change from a burden to a pleasure, even to the primary necessity of life. And thus socialists envision a land where there is an eternal surplus of all goods and where work is a pleasure. So much for scientific socialism, which von Mises wrote simply imagines the fading away of any obstacles to its paradise. This is one of the saving lies to which socialists cling. Von Mises wrote that the saving lie enables the socialist to believe that failure to achieve his lofty aspirations is due not to his own inadequacy, but to defects in the social order. It tells him that not he himself, but the world is at fault for having caused his failure. And as von Mises explains, he clings to his saving lie, and when he must make the choice of renouncing it or logic, he prefers to sacrifice logic. For life, you see, would be unbearable for him without the consolation that he finds in the idea of socialism. Socialism, you see, becomes then an elixir against earthly adversity. But whereas the Christian belief in a recompense in the hereafter formed an incentive to virtuous conduct in this life, the socialist promise imposes no other duty than that of giving political support to the party of socialism. Thus, for the socialist, lies, disinformation, and deceit used in the attainment of socialist goals bears no sense of moral wrong, but are simply valid utilitarian means to an end. Von Mises notes that thus every socialist expects from socialism exactly what he has so far been denied: wealth for all, happiness in love, full physical and spiritual development for everyone, unfolding of great artistic and scientific abilities in all men. The socialist paradise would be the kingdom of perfection, populated by supermen, such as the nonsense of socialism and its greatest attraction. Von Mises argues that there are too many suffering from this Fourier complex to send to psychiatrists, which wouldn't work anyway. He contends that only through self-knowledge he must learn to endure his lot in life without looking for a scapegoat in which he can lay all the blame, and he must endeavor to grasp the fundamental laws of social cooperation. To von Mises, problems of social policy are problems of social technology, and their solution must be sought in the same way and by the same means that are at our disposal in the solution of other technical problems, by rational reflections and by examination of the given conditions. The refusal or inability of socialists to address social problems with such reason leads them to persist in their utopian visions. prompting them to resort to whatever means necessary for furthering their cause. Thus, the deceit, the petty lies, and the promises from United States liberals who are merely disguised socialists. And next time, when we return to this subject matter, we'll look at some of those lies and how liberals co-opt language itself into the service of their own sick, twisted idiotology. We'll return in just a moment. In preparing today's program, as very much as with yesterday's, we had a series of pieces that we'd been sitting on. As we began to prepare this program late last evening, early this morning, we discovered that there was a very unique intertwining with some of the pieces that we'd been sitting on. Some of the segments we share with you in today's Perspectives on America are in fact actually posted on the Federal Observer today. And yet, to do a vocal rendering of some of them, because many of our listeners do not have access to the internet or the computer, and I understand why. But I fought it for so many years, and I wouldn't have it any other way today. The information network that is out there is so outstanding, so absolutely phenomenal. I discovered a piece late last night on the most unusual of websites, one of the most phenomenal, honest, true education websites that I've ever come across. Will not be sharing that one with you today because it unto itself makes for quite a program. It was a piece written by Karl Marx a long, long time ago. We all know Karl Marx for his work, The Communist Manifesto. Many don't know Marx for his other writings. And there was a piece that Marx did, I don't know the date yet, I'm still trying to do some research on it, that makes some very intense commentary about Jewish influence on our everyday life, on government, on religion, if you will. And I was just blown away when I found this piece last night. We're going to share it with you probably sometime next week. I don't know when. Time allows. We'll get to it. One of the pieces, as we've just shared with you, kind of begins to move closer and closer to our understanding of socialists, socialism. And it leads us to this next segment. I had seriously contemplated doing it in one of my typical voices and chose better of it. We have enough clarity problems listening on the shortwave to begin with. It is a letter that I received quite some time ago, and I believe there was a time maybe 6-8 months ago I actually shared this letter with our evening audience. I felt it imperative to share it with you now. It is entitled, A Letter from the New World Order. And it is addressed to you, the listener, to the non-listener, to everyone out there in America. And it becomes, well, I'm not sure we need to lay any explanation upon it. I think it is quite self-explanatory. I believe the time has come to reveal to you some of the perplexities that you have faced in recent decades. It is well for you to understand some of these things so that you might know how to behave in the new world order now taking shape in the earth. We want you to be able to become fully involved and integrated into our new society. After all, this is for your best interest, if you will do this. First of all, it is well that you understand some of our purposes so that you may more fully cooperate. I cannot tell you the hard times you will face if you resist us. We have ways of dealing with resistors. I am only telling you this now since it is much too late to turn things around. The days of putting a stop to us have long since passed. We have full control of the earth and its finance, along with the major media propaganda. And there is simply no way any nation or power can defeat us. We have eyes in every level of government, in every nation of the world. We know what is being planned, for our ears and eyes are ever present. State secrets are fully known to us. China recently accused the media in the United States of lying about Kosovo. Oh, you silly people, of course we lie. In this way, we can keep the people unbalanced and always facing controversy, which is very helpful to us. Have you not seen the talk show spectacle? Some of you believe we are the liberals and the good people are the conservatives. In reality, both serve our purposes. Each camp merely serves with the stamp of our approval, but they are not allowed to present the real issues. By creating controversy on all levels, no one knows what to do. So in all of this confusion, we go ahead and accomplish what we want with no hindrance. Consider your own President of the United States. Even though he regularly breaks every known check on his power, no one can stop him. He goes ahead and does whatever we want him to do anyway. The Congress has no power to stop him. He does what we want, since he knows if he does not, because of his rather unique character, we can have him removed in a moment's time. It's not that a rather brilliant strategy on our part. You cannot take us to court because you can't see us, and the courts are our servants as well. We run everything, and yet you do not know who to attack. I must say this invisible hand is wonderfully devised and without any known historical precedent on this scale. We rule the world, and the world cannot even find out who is ruling them. This is truly a wonderful thing. In our media, we present before you exactly what it is we want you to do. And then, as if in a flash, our little servants obey. We can send American or European troops to wherever we like, whenever we like, and for whatever purpose we like, and you dutifully go about our business. How much more evidence do you need? We can make you desire to leave your homes and family and go to war merely at our command. We only need to present some nonsense to you from the president's desk or on the evening news, and we can get you all fired up to do whatever we like. You can do nothing but what we put before you. And when any of you seek to resist us, we have ways of making you look ridiculous, as we have done with your militia movement. We have delighted to use this movement to show the world how impotent any resistance is. They look so silly, marching around with their guns as if they were some match for our military. Look at what we did near Waco. Did the Davidians' little store of weapons help them? We have generally taxed you and used that money to make such sophisticated weapons that you can in no way compete. Your own money has served to forge the chains we bind you with, since we are in control of all money. Some of you think you may escape by buying some land in the county and then the country and growing a garden. Let me remind you that you still pay us ground rent. Oh, you may call it property taxes, but it still goes to us. You see, you need money no matter what you do. If you fail to pay your ground rent to us, we will take your land and sell it to someone who will pay us. You think we cannot do this? And with your ground rent, we pay for the indoctrination of your children in the public schools which we have set up. We want them to grow up well-trained into the system of our way of thinking. Your children will learn what we want them to learn, when we want them to learn it, and you pay for it through your ground rent. Those funds are also used for other projects we have in mind, and our contractors are paid handsomely for their work. You may doubt that we own your children or have such control, but you will find that we do. We can declare that you abuse your children when you spank them, and we'll have them confiscated. If they do not show up for school indoctrination, we can accuse you of neglect, thereby giving them to us. Your children are not yours. They are ours. You must inoculate them. You must bring them to our hospitals if we decree, or we will take them from you. You know this, and we know this. Through our electronic commerce, we are able to see where you are, what you are buying, and how much you have to buy things with. Where do you suppose we come up with our monthly financial statistics? Through the internet and other sources, we can even know how you think and what you say. It is not especially important to us what you believe, as long as you do what we say. Your beliefs are nonsense anyway, but if you think you have a following and we perceive that you might be somewhat dangerous to our agenda, we have ways to deal with you. We have a Pandora's box of mischief with which to snare you. We can have you in court so long you will never get out. We can easily drain away all your assets over one pretext or another. We have inexhaustible funds with which to draw from to pay our lawyers. These lawyers are paid by you in the form of taxes. You do not have this vast supply of wealth. We know how to divide and conquer. Have we not brought down the rulers of countries through our devices? Do you think your tiny self will be any match for us? And let us consider your religions and the moral majority. The moral majority is neither moral nor is it in the majority. Oh, we have delighted to use this wet noodle of a movement to make ridiculous the Christian faith. The silly men who run that organization always end up with egg on their faces. We have always put them in defense of themselves, as we have so successfully done with the NRA. We can make it seem by our media propaganda that the National Rifle Association is actually the new radical attackers. Have we not turned the American conservative movement upon its ear? If it serves our purpose, we can use the conservatives to turn the liberals on their ear. It makes no difference to us. But it serves to make you believe there are two sides struggling for their particular position. This helps to make things seem fair and free, since everyone has a voice. But actually, there's only one side now with all kinds of masks on. But you are unable to penetrate our purposes. You see, we can do whatever we like, and you can do nothing about it. Does it not seem reasonable that you simply obey and serve us? Because you see, otherwise you get eaten up in the resistance you suppose will liberate you. You cannot be liberated. Imagine how you can. We supply your fuel for your cars. We can turn off whenever we like, claiming that there is some sort of fuel shortage. What if your car breaks down? You cannot get parts for it without us. We supply all the money you use. At any whim of our desire, we can stop the money supply or cause a complete crash altogether. We can then order the president to declare all money worthless, and that we will have to have new money. All of your stashes of cash will go up with smoke in a moment's time. And don't you need food? If necessary, we can cause a trucker's strike, which would stop deliveries of food to your local store. We can starve you whenever we like. You only have food because we have provided it to you from our table. During the Great Depression, we controlled the food. We heaped mountains of food behind fences and let it rot. The hungry were then made to work in our labor camps, even though there was enough and more to feed them. Do you really think you can beat us? You say you will hoard gold coins so you will still have money in the time of the crash. We can simply pass a law which outlaws the possession of gold as we have done in the past. If we find gold in your possession, we will simply confiscate it and put you in prison for breaking the law. While in prison, you would be required to work in one of our prison industries. We have so formed a picture of the labor camps in our prisons these days that no one seems to object to them. We tell people that murderers should pay for their own keep. No one seems to consider that we have the power to put tomato growers there also. We can pass laws that prohibit gardens and then make up some scientific reason why you may only buy food from our sources. If someone sees you growing tomatoes, they will report you to us, and then we will have you in our fields working for us. Oh, you silly nationalists, there is no escape for you. For since long before you were born, we were planning your capture. Your teachers and ministers have been forming your thoughts for us for generations now. You have no idea how to pull out of our influence short of suicide. Go ahead, commit suicide. It will only help us to deal with the excessive population. You cannot hurt us, find us, or even imagine what we are up to. I'm throwing you these few crumbs only so that you may, if you have a little good sense, obey and follow our orders. Understand, we control your mind. We run Hollywood. The movies such as Terminator and Armageddon, along with a great host of others, were simply created to get you thinking according to our direction. You've been made to delight in violence so that when we send you off to kill some bad men we have put before you, you move without a whimper. We have placed violent arcade games in your malls to prepare your young minds in the art of battle. We have made you to view our armies and police as the good forces, and you submit to things that were unthinkable just a few decades, albeit just a few months ago. Our artful programs are all designed to help you to submit and even help the New World Order. Star Trek and other such creations have taught you to simply obey orders from the new international rulers. Oh, silly people, you thought you were being entertained while you were actually being educated. Dare I use the words brainwashed or mind control? Have you seen the latest Star Wars movie that was issued a couple of years ago? What a masterpiece of mental manipulation. Humans confer with nondescript beasts of all shapes and sizes, and they do it in English. I wonder where those space beasts learned English. Oh, the simpleness of the mind of the citizen. He never considers he is being taken into fairyland. We have placed advertisements for Star Wars almost everywhere you go. You found them at Walmart, Kmart, Taco Bell, and a host of our institutions of commerce, and now we prepare for the next chapter. There's something we want you to learn from these movies, or perhaps it could be said there is something we do not want you to learn. Either way, we will have what we want in the whole affair. Of course, to keep you off guard, we have instructed our elected officials to appear to be correcting the evil of our violence. There are those who are now speaking against violence in Hollywood movies. This will not solve the problem, but will only make the people believe the problem is being worked on. Sex and violence are the very best powers to use to help us gain our advantage. How the people loathe to give up their sex and violence, so we place all they want before them. In this way, we keep them so occupied. They do not have the integrity or brain power to deal with the really important matters which are left entirely in our hands. President Clinton was very helpful to us in these matters. We knew of what character he was before we placed him as president. Exposing him was very helpful in adjusting the moral habits of the youth downward. This was to our advantage. And now we give you Bush. Even more agreeable to us were the vain efforts of those who thought they could remove Clinton against our will. He was useful to us and will not be removed by anyone until we are ready to have him removed. He served his term. He served his purpose. Excuse me if I seem to be mocking your system of beliefs, but they are outdated. Have you no eyes to see your vain liberties and your righteous pontifications are nothing before us? You can only do what we say you can do. We remove presidents when we are ready, and the leader we set up will be there until it serves us to have another. At that time, we place our purpose leader before you, and you vote for what we want. In that way, we give you the vain voting exercise in the belief you had something to do with placing your president in office. Our recent war in Serbia had many purposes to it, but we do not speak of these things openly. We let the talk show host blather all sorts of nonsense, but none of it touched the core. First of all, there was a wealth of natural resources in Kosovo that we had to have complete control of. Kosovo had large supplies of uranium in its soil, and uranium is very helpful to our regime. Also, it suited us to keep all such minerals out of the hands of potential enemies. Milosevic had not been helpful in giving those resources into our hands, so we simply made things difficult for him. Victory in Yugoslavia was imminent. We reduced that proud nation to the level of humility that we require from all people. After the war, because Mr. Milosevic did not sufficiently humble himself, we took him to the World Court, charged with war crimes. No, we made up that term. Rather ingenious, don't you think? How could there be such a thing as a war crime? The very nature of war is that rules are off. It is so entertaining to watch the nations try to fight war according to the laws we have placed before them. The only war crime there really is only involves the crime of being against us. Anyone against us is violating our law. As you've seen, when someone is for us, we do not care what they do. Was not Nelson Mandela a bomb-toting terrorist who killed many of his enemies? We made a hero of him. We observe no laws when it comes to war. We do what we want, when we want, and where we wish to. We can starve nations to death, we can ruin civilians, and any other horror for which we would take our enemies to court. Look at our example. We bombed Serbia out of its wits, bombed the Kosovans out of their homes, poisoned their rivers and streams, turned off their electricity, making a grand crisis in that country. And then we masterfully make it appear that it is all Mr. Milosevic's fault and he needed to go to court for it. It was the same way we made our inferno at Waco look like Mr. Koresh's fault. And then, of course, there was our other villain, Saddam, with all of his weapons of mass destruction. Bad men are a dime a dozen, and we conjure one up whenever it suits us. And Osama bin Laden is just another in a long line of useful tools. This is really quite funny when you think of it. I am not one who is usually given to humor, but I do catch myself laughing sometimes at the absolute absurdity of the notions we place before you, and you readily accept. Do you wonder that the leaders of the world tremble at our presence? They know they have no power except the power we give them. We have no fear of Russia or China, for we are already in full control of their system of things. China knows that we can freeze any number of its corporations in America and all of its capital at the stroke of a pen. We use the nations for what we want to use them for. Everyone knows that they must yield to us or die. Fortunately, we've had a few resistors, such as Saddam and Milosevic, that have been helpful in showing the world leaders what we will do to them if they do not submit. There is only glory in following our purposes and doing what we say. If one does not, there will be such a sad and tragic result. I would really have you spared of such an end. But then again, if you are not spared, it is of no consequence to us. We will use you to alleviate some of the overpopulation problem. Some of you thought that You could stop us by placing a bomb in one of our abortion clinics or in a government building. You silly souls, how can that hurt us? All that does is give us an example to use so that we might place more controls and more heavy burdens upon the population. We love it when you rebel and blow something up. You are our reason for making more laws against all those things which might contribute to your freedom from us. If someone did not blow something up on occasion, we would have no justification in placing more hedges about you. Can't you see how impossible it is for you to resist us? The more you wiggle, the more we squeeze. Our kingdom is the kingdom of money. Excuse me, but I must confess that we are the rulers of the kingdom of non-money. You must see the humor in that statement. You see, we have given you a piece of paper or some numbers on a computer screen that we have termed as money. It is backed up by nothing, proven by nothing, but what we say it is. We, in fact, create it from nothing. We print it. We loan it. We give it its value. We take its value away. All things that have to do with money are in our hands. Think of it. What is it that you can do against us without money? If you try to resist, we can cancel your credit or freeze your accounts. Your cash is easily confiscated. We have made so many rules in the realm of living that you cannot live without money. Camp on government land and you must move in 2 weeks. You cannot grow much of a garden in 2 weeks. Many of our wilderness trails are entered by permit only. We have passed laws that do not allow you to live in trailers over a certain period without moving to another location. Have you not thought it ridiculous that we will allow a man to live in a box full time, but we will not allow a man to live in an RV full time unless he is in a tax-paying campground? We want you to be in the system. When you are buying a house, we not only receive the tax revenue to use for our purposes, but we gain large increases from the interest on the loan. You may pay for your house two or three times over from the interest alone. The interest is also taxed, which is again placed for use in those sectors of influence we choose. We do not want you to escape free. And that is why we have made it as we have. You are our property. We will not permit you to buy or sell unless you submit to our mark of authority. If you go to court against us, we will wear you out there, and in the end, you will lose. If you use violence, we will end up having you in one of our labor camps, more specifically called prison industries. You need our money, our entertainments, our fuel, and our utilities to function, and if you don't have them, you feel deprived. By this, you are made to yield to our will. You don't even know how to think anymore since we have thoroughly emasculated your religions and your faith in God. Now you only have yourself, and we have gotten that self pretty well chasing its tail these days. I hope this little note is sufficient to inform you what the new millennium is all about. The 21st century is our century. You may enter it if you do as you are told. We have no intention of playing around with your so-called human rights or your so-called constitution. These things were only used for our purposes for a time. Your constitution is a joke to us, and we can do with it what we please. It never occurred to you that 50 years ago your constitution was used to refuse abortions. When we decided to have abortions legalized, we used the same constitution to justify it. Your human rights are what we say they are. And your constitution is what we say it is. We have only used this phrase of human rights to keep things sufficiently in turmoil. The more things are unsettled, the better we like them until we have everything in complete servitude. This little letter may offend you, since I speak so plainly, but that truly is no concern of ours. Too bad, isn't it?
Our colonial fathers showed us the way. for freedom that guides us today. Our spirit lives on in true Americans who answer the call, protect and defend. Without liberty, so I'll stand for what's right. As long as I breathe, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. Every time I hear children say the pledge of allegiance, I'm reminded there's no price too high for freedom. To keep America first, last and forever. We must stand our ground, fighting together.
Why would you do that? What would you use it for? My fellow cubicle dweller is an interesting fellow. Former Special Forces grunt, son of a famous actor. He burned out after being seriously injured in the Army and bummed around Asia doing God knows what before coming back to America. And then he bootstrapped his way to a fairly good tech writing job at the Silicon Valley branch of a Japanese robotics company. I feel a certain kinship with him. We've both made some serious mistakes for which we're paying some very serious prices. He's single. I'm divorced. He's cynical as hell, and so am I, and neither of us has many friends outside of work. I like him. And that's why I told him how I spend most of my weekends, and that's why when he asked the question, I gave an honest answer. An answer he found disturbing and offensive. I should have just shut up or even lied. You see, I shoot. A lot. I have off and off for decades. When I'm not shooting or working, I'm cleaning up from shooting or getting ready to shoot. When I'm not practicing with my M1A, I practice with a 45. Sometimes, just for a variety, I practice with a knife. What little money I have left after taxes, bills, and child support, I spend on food and books and reloading stuff and surplus rifle ammo. Rarely in that order. You see, it's not for enjoyment. I tell people and myself that I enjoy it all to pieces, but the truth is I don't actually enjoy it that much. Well, I'm hardly Jeff Cooper, but I'm at least good enough with a handgun to give a street mug a reason to regret his career choice. I don't hunt. I'm not planning a life of crime, so why spend so much time on it? That's the question my friend asked me. It's the question I use to lay awake, asking myself night after night, already knowing the answer, along with, am I crazy? My daughter flew up from L.A. to visit for a week during the holiday break and inadvertently reinforced my reason for shooting so much. The first time I'd been to an airport since the September 11th hijackings. I'd heard how much worse they'd gotten, but I still wasn't ready for what I found. After buying an e-ticket online, I was required to present proof of my identity at least 3 days before the flight, or my daughter would not be allowed on board. I was forbidden to enter the short-term parking lot until I consented to have my car searched. I didn't ask whether a cased rifle in the trunk, legal even in California, would cause the searcher to lose sphincter control. I just drove away unsearched. Came back later. While standing in the first of several lines in the airport, I noticed an immense machine scanning luggage for contraband, taking up space once used to welcome passengers. I thought the large American flag that covered it was a nice ironic touch. A colorful, illustrated sign listing the sorts of things you could be arrested for smuggling into an airplane, such as plastic cutlery, corkscrews, and even nail files. A prominent notice that it was a federal offense not to inform the airline of firearms in checked baggage, which would, of course, be discovered by the immense machine. It's not, oddly enough, an offense to have a firearm in checked baggage, but to be legal, the baggage must receive a sticker that says, in effect, "Steal this bag." When I arrived to meet my daughter's plane, I was refused permission to go to the gate. No amount of explaining, arguing, or pleading would produce an exception to this rule. This protective rule required my barely teenage daughter to wander alone through a busy airport concourse until she happened to arrive at the closest location I could approach without being shot by National Guardsmen. When my daughter and I went to the security checkpoint for her return flight, strangely enough, you're allowed to escort a child to the gate, but not to pick one up there. An unpleasant woman with a heavy accent demanded that we remove our jackets, belts, and wallets and send them through the X-ray machine. Some passengers were required to remove their shoes. Venerable elderly ladies were pulled aside for, well, random, I think, wand searches. One particular lady, blonde, young, heartbreakingly well-built, received particular attention. She was apparently considered too dangerous from a mere wand search and needed to be patted down. After I beeplessly passed through the metal detector, another woman refused to allow me to pass until I removed my hat. She ran her hand through the inside very thoroughly. It's a rather old hat. I have a rather greasy head. I do hope that she enjoyed it. I looked around and noticed the postures of the National Guardsmen who surrounded the checkpoint. You know, the ones posted at the airports to protect us from terrorists. They faced inward. Their M16s slung at the ready were pointed at my daughter and I. What particularly disturbed me about all of this was how cheerfully my fellow herd members received it. We seemed to have fallen into a movie about occupied France, and it didn't bother anyone. I wanted to shake people by the shoulders. Either I was crazy or everyone else in the airport was. Later that afternoon, I went to the range and burned through over 100 rounds of .308. Just got to get those groups smaller from the prone position. All of which leads me back to my friend's question and to the bleak and offensive way I replied to it. "I only expect to use it once," I told him. I fancy myself an honest man. Never intentionally harmed an innocent soul, and I've never stolen so much as a slice of bread, even when I was broke and hungry. I obey every law I can bring myself to, sometimes at the cost of self-contempt, but there are some things I cannot do, and someday those things will be demanded of me. And then I'll be branded a dangerous animal, and someone will come for me, and I will resist. And then the shooting will begin, and I'll likely be killed. I just don't want to die alone. "Are you telling me," my friend asked, "that you'd shoot some poor pimple-faced grunt just because he was ordered to be the first one through the door?" Well, I recalled that my friend had earlier said he was assigned to counter-terrorism work in the Special Forces and that his training had more to do with breaking down doors than storming bunkers. I looked up and met his eyes. "I have to take the consequences of my choice," I replied, "and he has to take the consequences of his." I wish I could believe that the original intent of our republic can be restored. I really do. Not long ago, I reread L. Neil Smith and Aaron Zellman's book, Hope. I leaned back in my chair and tried to retreat into a fantasy of what it would be like to have someone like Alexander Hope as president, providing a way for us to restore our liberty while punishing those guilty of stealing it from us. I just couldn't do it. No president like that will arise. Americans, I fear, won't rise up either, even when it's too late. In the unlikely event we do organize for revolt, we will lose. And since I can't imagine living in the future America which I envision, I expect to die. And when I die, I don't expect to be surrounded by friends, so enemies will have to do. I just don't want to die alone. This brings us to nearly the end of a very thought-provoking hour on perspectives on America. Certainly, I do not advocate some of the thoughts that were shared with us in the letter from the New World Order. I'm certainly not a promoter thereof, and I think anyone who's listened to this program long enough knows that. I share these things with you to challenge you, to make you think, not to get you to give up hope. That's the last thing you should do. Put your faith and your trust in Him, the Almighty Creator, the Almighty Provider. One of the members in the chat room says we all die alone. I don't agree with that, Trooper. Not if we put our faith and our trust in Him. I know we've scared some people. I know we've upset some people today. I promise you that has been our full and complete intent. If I don't challenge you, if I don't get you thinking and making some decisions on your own and making some of your own preparations, then what purpose has this program served? I suggest none. That's not the way we want it. To those of you who've been in the chat room this morning, it's been a small group, but a dedicated group. Thanks for being with us. I've not been able to participate because of the intensity of this program. Coming up here very soon on Perspectives on America, a brand new rendering of Henry David Thoreau's Civil Disobedience, which to me is going to be a perfect follow-up to this program today. And our new series will be starting shortly, Dawn of the Dead. It's time for us to call it a day, till the good Lord sees fit to bring us together again. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
Bayous of Louisiana, Calbo Pay, that's what the Cajuns say. And in New York's Little Italy, Que Bella Terra, that's how they say it their way. And in the beer halls of Milwaukee, you'll hear the words, Vishen Daslan. And it's Kayleen.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get. And you will definitely see the difference.
visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.